Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1956, that Elvis Presley shared his success with his family by purchasing what for his mother? Was that A, gold baby grand piano, B, a pink Cadillac, C, a Lockheed jet airplane, or D, an ostrich skin jacket? What did Elvis buy for his mama back in 1956 on this very day? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1653 that composer Johann Pachelbel was born. What is the name of his composition that is so frequently heard today? Hint, this song remained in obscurity for hundreds of years, but the chord progressions in a 1968 recording by Jean-François Pallard Orchestra has been adopted in contemporary pop songs and at funerals and weddings. Was that song A, Canon in D major, B, At Last, C, Wedding March, or D, Clair de Lune? So which one of these compositions is Pachelbel known for? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August the 31st. Well, it was on this day, back in 1935, that George Gershwin completed the orchestral score for the opera Porgy and Bess. And it was 44 years ago today, 1974, that John Lennon testified in federal court that the Nixon administration tried to have him deported because of his involvement with the anti-war demonstrations at the 1972 Republican Convention in Miami, Florida, 1974 today. Finally, it was also on this day, but in 1995 in Cleveland, Ohio, that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum ribbon-cutting ceremony took place. The museum officially opened the next day.
Let this love be the fading sky, or we could drift all night to the new sunrise. Pass me a drink or maybe two, one for me and one for you, and we'll be free.
Donovan Frankenreiter's Island version of his song Free introduces and sort of sets the mood for our country and folk music news. It's an article titled, Kenny Chesney Sings Songs for the Saints. After storms devastated the Caribbean, the country star is putting his music and his money where his mouth is. This is written by Sarah Rodman, published in Entertainment Weekly on the 3rd of August, 2018. If Kenny Chesney actually wore sleeves, he would be wearing his heart on one of them. As it is, the singer-songwriter's emotions are apparent from his red eyes as he chokes up discussing the circumstances surrounding the recording of his new album, Songs for the Saints, coming out on July 27th. That was last month. I wasn't prepared for the amount of destruction I saw, says Chesney, reliving the moment he returned to his part-time home on St. John, following the havoc wrecked in the Caribbean by Hurricane Irma in September 2017. My heart broke for all those people that I had lived with and loved with. A huge part of my adult life was and still is spent down there. Indeed, as the 50-year-old East Tennessee native recounts the tale of the apocalyptic storms while sitting on his tour bus on a recent scorchingly hot day in Phoenix, nearly 50,000 fans are filing into Chase Field, sold in part on Chesney's tales of easy, breezy island life. The guitars and tiki bars, flavor of hits like No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problems, When the Sun Goes Down, and Pirate Flag, as well as his high-energy live shows, have helped Chesney win a combined 8 CMA and ACM Entertainment of the Year trophies, making him among the most bankable stadium acts in any genre of music for more than a decade, and coalescing a massive fan base known as No Shoes Nation. The article skips down and ends with this. A silver lining did emerge from the storm clouds when two of Chesney's core beliefs were confirmed, that the people who inhabit the islands are an extended family who help one another in times of need, and that music is medicine. To that end, Chesney also flew down 5 truckloads of musical instruments and sound equipment to donate to the battered St. John's School of the Arts. There's a lot of restoration that needs to happen, but not just physically, he says, emotion welling up again. I mean, the human spirit. Everybody's soul needs to heal. That's where music comes in. Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain introduces our classical music news. It's entitled Iraq's National Symphony Orchestra Play On Despite Unpaid Wages. This is published in thenational.ae on the 14th of August, 2018. The ensemble has lost more than half of its members since the start of the year, when the government issued a directive barring state employees with 2 jobs from receiving 2 salaries. In a dusty Baghdad dance studio, conductor Mohammed Amin Ezzat tries to fire up the musicians of Iraq's National Symphony Orchestra, whose enthusiasm has been dampened by 8 months without pay. An aging air conditioner fights to beat back the summer heat in the cramped space at the Capitol School of Music and Ballet, as the 57-year-old maestro leads the group through a rehearsal of Modest Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain, which is playing in the background now, as I pointed out before. The shaggy-haired Ezzat and the 40 musicians surrounding him are gearing up to perform at Baghdad's National Theater on Saturday, but the group's morale is at an all-time low. The ensemble has lost more than half its members since the start of the year, when the government issued that directive barring state employees with 2 jobs from receiving 2 salaries. The anti-corruption measure was suggested by the World Bank and should affect only about a third of the orchestra's musicians, but because of delays in carrying out the reform, wages have been withheld from the entire group. The orchestra is in great danger, as Ezzat said. Some don't have enough money to come, and others are disappointed by the impact of politics on the orchestra. On the Pierce piece, officially created in 1970 after several unsuccessful attempts, Iraq's National Orchestra has survived decades of upheaval. It has survived wars, an invasion, a 12-year international embargo, and a devastating 3-year battle against Islamic State group jihadists, which came to an end last year. But this may be the last straw for the outfit, a collateral victim of Iraq's war on corruption. Not being paid for 8 months has had a terrible psychological effect on the musicians, but will continue to resist peacefully with our music, said Azat, who became orchestra's first Iraq conductor in 1989. We're on the purse piece, but sure that we won't jump. When all of its salaries are tallied up, including the maestro's $1,200 a month, peanuts for a major conductor, the orchestra costs the state about $85,000 a year. The sum is a pittance compared to the exorbitant figures siphoned off by ministers and high officials who have either fled or been arrested. The conductor, his daughter Noor, a timpanist, and his sons Hassam and Islam, who play the cello and the viola respectively, have all been without a salary since January. But according to Reid Alawi, the head of administrative affairs at Iraq's cultural ministry, there's no reason to panic. The wages will soon be paid. The finance ministry has asked for a regularization of contracts. Verification majors are underway, and this explains the late payment of wages. The article skips down. The orchestra cannot afford the diesel to fuel the building's generator, but the musicians play on in the windowless room, using their cell phones to illuminate the sheet music. There have been crises in the past, but this is the worst, said Doa Majid Al-Azawi, an oboe player. Especially since my father and I are musicians, we don't know what will happen. But if the orchestra has to stop its culture in Iraq, that will be dealt a deadly blow, the 25-year-old said. When the studio's lights eventually make a flickering return, so too does the player's enthusiasm, and the music swells. As long as we live, music will live. It's our culture, said Noor, the conductor's daughter. And in pop and rock music news, we have, of course, the Beach Boys, California Girls playing in the background, and the article is from the Rolling Stone Guide, The Beach Boys, Reviews, America's longest-running band from surf rock to studio symphonies and beyond. This is written by Bob Sheffield, and it's published in the August 2018 Rolling Stone. So they review the albums that this group has put out, and they recommend them in different groups. For example, the must-haves include the album titled Today, 1965. I only tried surfing once, and the board almost hit me in the head, Brian Wilson told Rolling Stone in 1999. But he turned his fantasies into a California dream, world of fast cars and cool waves, one that might even have room for a scared misfit like him. Today, the name of the album, is full of yearningly complex tunes like When I Grow Up to Be a Man and She Knows Me Too Well, which feels like Greek tragedy with doo-wop harmonies and surf guitars. The second one they recommend as a must-have is Pet Sounds, 1966. Brian got blown away by the Beatles' Rubber Soul, and Pet Sounds was his response. He paid the price for ditching their hit-making formula when Pet Sounds flopped. Now it's one of the planet's most beloved albums, ranking number 2 on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest albums. Yet it's still starting to hear, full of alien sonic details, especially God Only Knows, a song everybody wishes they could sing, although only angels or Carl Wilson could reach the high notes. Another must-have album, according to Rolling Stone, is Endless Summer, 1974. A whole album of fun, fun, fun stretched out to a double vinyl portrait of the life and death of the American dream. Endless Summer has all the early hits from the joyride of I Get Around to the moody gloom of In My Room. It cuts off before Pet Sounds, but it still remains their essential anthology, if only because you're guaranteed not to run into Kokomo. And then finally, as a must-have, the album titled The Smile Sessions from 2011. Brian wanted to follow the monumental 1966 single Good Vibrations with an even more ambitious teenage symphony to God. But after a studio meltdown, he abandoned the project, finally finishing it with his touring band in 2004. Tapes from the original 60s sessions were compiled in 2011. It still sounds otherworldly. The Rolling Stone Review goes on to list five albums that they list as further listening needed, and then an additional five that are going deeper. And then finally, they end with quite a few hits that are simply called more gems. The Beach Boys. Chatham County Lines, The Traveler, introduces our local music news. As published in pinecone.org, August 2018, here is the complete main stage Red Hat Amphitheater schedule for the 2018 Wide Open Bluegrass that's coming next month. On Friday, September 28th, about 1 hour each, starting at 2 p.m. with Michael Cleveland and Flamekeeper, then Flat Lonesome, then The Trust, an all-star benefit for the IBMA Trust Fund, featuring Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver, Balsam Range, Lonesome River Band, Donna Ulisi, Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, Sideline, and Love Cannon. Then Tommy Emmanuel and Friends, featuring Brian Sutton and Rob Ickes and Trey Hensley. Then Earls of Leicester, presented by Jerry Douglas, live CD release, and the evening at 9:30 to 11 p.m. with Allison Brown, Becky Bueller, Sierra Hull, Missy Raines, and Molly Tuttle, with special guests Rihanna Giddens and Gillian Welch. And then on Saturday, September 29th, starting at 2 p.m. with Volume 5, and then Lori Lewis and Friends, and then the Gibson Brothers. Then from 5:30 to 7 p.m., Chatham County Line, who are playing in the background now, with special guests Mandolin Orange, Libby Roddenborough of Mipso, Bobby Britt of Town Mountain, Compton and Newberry. Then there's Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder, with guest appearance by Patti Loveless. Finally ending the whole thing at 9:30 to 11 p.m. with the Wide Open Jam featuring Sam Bush and John Cohen. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, A DJ Could Save Your Life Tonight. A real DJ is part shaman, part tech wizard, part crowd psychologist, and all artist. Many people claim the title, but far fewer embody it. This is written by Selwyn Seifu Hines on the 30th of December 2017 in the New York Times. On New Year's Eve, you'll be dancing, one hopes. If you're lucky, you'll be dancing to an honest-to-God disc jockey, not to someone's Spotify playlist or the musings of the latest demi-celebrities to fancy themselves party conductors. A real DJ is part shaman, part tech wizard, part crowd psychologist, all artist. Many people claim the title, but far fewer embody it. That's because for the art of DJing, technology has been as much of a disruptor as it has been a boon. New software and hardware tools allow the neophyte to deploy a base version of skills that take decades to perfect. We've also seen the nurturing of an entire generation for whom music is an a la carte experience. Add to that the skepticism, if not outright hostility, much of our society shows towards the notions of expertise and hard-won knowledge. What this means is that people treat DJs as if they're disposable, like the entitled partygoer who demands Lil Pump's Gucci Gang when the DJ is on an entirely different musical planet, as if a DJ were merely a flesh-and-blood iPod to poke and prod, or the promoters who figure that if you can get an any old robot with iTunes account to play whatever's charting on the radio, why pay for specialness? The DJ Rich Medina follows a special ritual when his parties reach a certain point in the night. His fingers begin to tap a rhythm on his keyboard's controls. He's bringing in a new song, and by the sound of the initial horn fanfare, the people on the dance floor know it's Waters No Get Enemy by the Nigerian Afrobeat superstar Kella Kuta. But Rich doesn't simply bring the record in, he plays with the horns, stuttering them, teasing, fashioning an entirely different rhythm from them. It's something old and new in a spontaneous, innovative moment. He's working the rhythmic and muscle memory of his dancers because his mind knows what's coming, as does the body, quivering with anticipatory release. And when he finally lets the tune in, when that horn introduction explodes, so does the dance floor. The term DJ has been around forever, long used by radio personalities and by vocalists and toasters of Jamaican dancehall. But in our immediate context, a DJ is the controlling maestro of the dance floor, the person to whom you surrender your soul for several hours of musical release. Good DJs are extraordinary artists, and great DJs are transcendent magicians. The art requires extensive musical knowledge. It demands technical know-how. The article skips down and ends with this. To live in the DJ temple is to live in the technical, the artistic, and the spiritual. A good DJ will grasp those elements to spin you a tale. A great DJ will use them to preach a sermon, leaving you spent and exhilarated by night's end, and maybe, if you're lucky, one of them will save your life. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1956 that Elvis Presley shared his success with his family by purchasing what for his mother? Was it A, a gold baby grand piano, B, a pink Cadillac, C, a Lockheed jet airplane, or D, an ostrich skin jacket? So what did he buy for his mama back in 56? Correct answer is answer B, a pink Cadillac. By the way, with the exception of the ostrich skin jacket, which Paul Manafort evidently bought, Elvis did buy each of the other listed items. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1653 that composer Johann Pachelbel was born. What is the name of his composition that's so frequently heard at weddings today? Is it a canon in D major? Is it At Last? Is it answer C, a wedding march? Or is it D, Clair de Lune? So which of those compositions is Pachelbel known for? Correct answer, answer A, canon in D major. As ClassicFM.com notes, love it or hate it, Pachelbel's canon in D is one of the most famous pieces of classical music of all time. But the facts behind the composition aren't well known. Classic FM busts the myths behind the enduring work. It's as simple as three violins, one cello, and eight bars of music repeated 28 times. Johann Pachelbel's canon has risen in popularity to become one of the best-known pieces of classical music ever written. It's hard to imagine a time when this piece wasn't a firm favorite at weddings, but in reality, not very much is known about Pachelbel's most famous piece. We don't even know exactly when it was composed, although it's thought it was around 1680. There are a few unsubstantiated claims that the music was written for the wedding of Bach's brother, Johann Christoph on 23 October 1694, but that's pretty unlikely. The cannon's popularity snowballed in the 1970s after French conductor Jean-François Palard made a recording. Since then, the music has been recorded hundreds of times, and the iconic harmony has made its way into pop songs, films, and adverts. But even before the public got hold of the piece, classical composers knew Pachelbel was on to a good thing. Handel, Haydn and Mozart all used the iconic bass line in some of their compositions in the following years. It's easy to be distracted by the tight harmonies in the three pretty violin tunes, but Pachelbel's approach to writing the music was almost mathematical. He uses an ostinato, the same bass line repeated over and over again, and a canon, the same music repeated by violin parts in a round, to construct his piece. Paul Nelson, 531-16-Quora.com, adds, "I used to play this so much at weddings we started calling it the Taco Bell Canon, and then we called it the Taco Hell, and then the Burrito from Purgatory. Yes, we were college students and we played a lot of weddings. It is the premier number one walk-in music of all time. But the truth is, I love the piece, and I always have. This is one of those pieces that musicians don't like, and often hate, with a passion, but which audiences love. Others include Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade and Ravel's Bolero, of which Ravel said, 'I have only composed one masterpiece, and that was Bolero. Unfortunately, it is not music.'" I think that's what makes canon in D so special, is that it's simple. Simple is hard to do well. The variations by the violins gradually increase in complexity, more notes per measure, and then it's still not over. You get new variations that take it in a new fun direction. It's a wonder of simplicity and effortless variation. It has an elegance, charm, and gracefulness that's hard to match. This from a musician and a composer who has been playing it and listening to it for 35 years and still loves it. So let's close out today's program with a bit of Pachelbel's Canon in D major. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review, and as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me. Randy Thompson at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.